Jewel by Chef Steps is a proud sponsor of Beer Sessions Radio. Jewel Sous Vide is the future of the kitchen. Jewel, perfect food every time. Learn more at chefsteps.com/joule.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, it's Tuesday, November 13th, 2018. I'm Jimmy Carboni, the host of Beer Sessions Radio. We're going to have a great show in front of us. We'll be talking with some New York City brewers who've traveled into Europe recently. And hopefully we'll end up drinking a lot of good beer. So one of my good buddies, Pete Lengel, is the brewer and co-owner at KCBC Brewing, not too far from here in Bushwick. And a couple years ago, he was in, had a cool trip on a motorcycle to down to Franconia in Germany. And he just was just out in Scandinavia. So Pete, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Jimmy. Good to be here.
Yeah, man. I'm really interested in your travels. In fact, just now at the bar at Roberta's Pizza, you said that you're tired because you're traveling so much. So tell me where you went and what you do on these trips, because it seems like you guys are always out there and different countries, different breweries.
Yeah, I think that's part of the modern craft beer scene, is that you have to go out and promote yourself. I always say kind of like a band going, you know, touring with their new album. But we want to get our name out in circles, and it's kind of a social media gig too. And it's great to meet other brewers and brew with them and learn from them and share ideas and technique and spread the KCBC love around the world. Recently, it was a Scandinavia trip. My partner, Tony, had already been there, so he met a bunch of brewers. He did some collaboration brews out there, and then we got invited back for a festival. It's usually a fest that anchors this sort of thing. So they invite you over for a fest, and you're like, if we're going to spend the money to send one of us over, we're going to try to pick up some collabs and make some friends. So this was the All-In Beer Fest. I guess that was last weekend. Shit. That was in Gothenburg, Sweden. So
All-In Beer Fest.
Yeah, there's a brewery called All-In. That was their annual fest. But we started the trip off, by we, I mean myself. This was a solo. Started off in Oslo and went to a brewery called Amundsen, which is absolutely phenomenal brewery. Gorgeous space. They got a big Braukon system, canning line, bottling line, barrel program, massive warehouse that they bought. They did it right. These guys are like planning for success. They got plenty of space to grow, and they just bought all the best like quality equipment they could get, and they're making like excellent beers over there.
Wow, man. So the world's catching on to craft beer.
Absolutely. Like everywhere I went in Scandinavia, the beers were just as good as what we got coming over here in the States. And they're like brewing the same stuff we got, you know, hazies, sours, barrel aged. They're, you know, doing similar malt bills, similar hopping techniques, everything we're doing. It's like the community with, I guess, technology, like, is pretty small. Like, I've been over to Germany, England, South America. Everyone's listening to the same podcast. We're all sharing information over the internet. We're all collaborating internationally. We're all kind of sharing everything globally, and it's pretty cool to see the same. But I was kind of looking for something different, and there were some breweries doing traditional brewing techniques over there, and they were using that Quebec yeast, which we're using here too, but they're kind of using it in a traditional ale.
So let's talk about that. So last month, the guy from Hand Brewery was in town, Stefan, and he was talking about the Quebec yeast. So that was new to me. I hadn't heard of it, but it seems like it's like this new magic yeast.
Yeah, I've been hearing about it for a while, and we haven't brought it in yet. But We're going to do our first Gevec brew next week in collaboration with Trevor from Greenpoint Beer and Ale. He's been brewing with it for a while now. He's been getting really good success. I went over and tried a bunch of the beers he made with it, and now we're going to put one into a beer on Tuesday at KCBC in collaboration with him and use some of his hopping techniques. So again, collaborations, right? Sharing ideas.
Yeah. But it must be exciting that you went to another country and you actually discovered something. So this Quebec yeast is something that's been around for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I think it's, I don't know, like age-wise, but it's like a yeast that's been passed down through the generations. And it's got some real interesting, like, its profile is, it's highly attenuative, it's highly flocculative. I don't know if that's a word. And
I don't know that second word.
And it ferments without producing fusels at really high temperature. So it doesn't produce a hot, nasty, like burning alcohol beer at really hot temperature, which also means it ferments very quickly. So you can get a beer. I know Trevor said he's put out an IPA in 1 week, which is ridiculous. Our IPAs on average take 17 days.
Wow. So
how hot?
Yeah, it's a magic yeast, huh?
I think you can get into the 90s with it, and it's still clean, and it produces some nice ester profile.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because what I heard from the Quebec was that it was something that you'd make a Norwegian
farmhouse
yeah. ale with.
That's what I tried over there, and I think some of the breweries were probably using it in IPAs too, but we're going with an IPA.
That's great, man. Well, cheers. Yeah. It's good to see you, man.
Yeah,
so
you too.
We're drinking one of your IPAs right now. What is it?
Yeah, this is another collaboration. This is with a band, though, this time. This is Behemoth. They're a black metal band out of Poland. I know this podcast is supposed to talk about German lagers, but I was in the cold room before heading over here, and we're like flat out of Lenny Lager right now. So I brought an IPA that we collabed with a Polish, not German, band, not brewery, and I brought a stout that we did with Randolph Beer. So this is a 7.7 stout, Maris Otter, flaked wheat, flaked rye, Citra, Motueka, and Centennial.
I know you're checking. You said you seem like you want to know the recipe.
I do.
You want to tell me. You have a lot of recipes, don't you?
Yeah. It's funny. Coming up in the home brewing scene, I used to work in Westchester, and I'd drive at least 3 hours a day back and forth to work, and I'd listen to these podcasts, and it would always kind of like bothered me that the brewers couldn't remember their recipes. Like, how do you not know the recipe? That's your recipe. Now that we've put close to a couple hundred brews in the tank, I can't remember my own recipes either. We're doing 2 to 3 beers a week, and we put a lot of thought into them, but like once it's done, it's written down, we've got a catalog, we can know everything that went into that beer, and it's kind of like off the server in the brain.
Yeah, and what are you looking at now to pull up this beer?
I just wrote notes off of the can. But this is one that we did a 0 day dry hop on as well. So this is a lot of breweries been doing this for a while. Another thing I've been
What's zero day dry hop?
Well, you actually knock out the wort into the fermenter and there's already hops in there.
Wow.
So the idea is you're getting a biotransformation and it's producing these compounds called thiols that are fruity. Oh, there's Kat Martinez.
Hey. All right. So, well, who you learn from the most? You think every collaboration You learn something different?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's what I love about this industry is everyone is like totally open. No one's holding back secrets. They're like, yeah, this is how we do it. This is what we do. And we give and take and share everything we know.
Great.
And everyone makes better beer.
Well, Katarina Martinez just walked in from Lineup Brewing. And she had a special trip. You were just in Germany for a Pink Boots Society scholarship trip.
I did.
So great to have you on.
Thank you. I
wanted to say, because Pete and I were chatting outside at the bar, and he's just been telling us about his recent trip to Scandinavia. But what seems to be happening is that the New York City Brewers Guild is so strong. I know you guys have a gathering tonight over at Braven Brewery, but it's so cool that so many people from around the world, brewers, are coming here to do collaborations with you guys.
Yeah, there's two Russian brewers in town right now that I'm trying to get over here. You know.
I ran into them, Zagavar. They're awesome.
They're with Finback right now, so nobody's responding, though, but hopefully they'll show up before the show's over.
Oh, yes. Bring him in here. That'd be awesome.
So, Kat, it's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you. I feel like I live here. I'm so always on the show with you.
Not too long ago, a month ago, you told us about the Pink Boot Society and the trip you were going on.
Yes.
So, how was it? I saw a great photo on Instagram. You brought back a number of German beers.
I did. It was really life-changing. So the Pink Boots does a bunch of scholarship programs when you're a member. And if you're not familiar with the Pink Boots, they are a society for women that are in beer, that make money from beer, which is really awesome. And there's a lot around the world. It's definitely ever-growing. But one of the biggest perks of being a member is you can apply for these scholarships. So this scholarship sent me to the lower Franconia region to a bunch of breweries that, for the most part, a good majority of them are handled by women. So, which means women brewers, women owners, like just a ton of really strong, awesome women. So the trip itself was absolutely life-changing. And yes, I brought back a lot of beer. You saw my suitcase. It was crazy.
No, that's cool. And I remember Pete, I think we invited Pete too, because two summers ago, you took a trip on a motorcycle. You ended up in Franconia. You're at the Gonstaller Brewery.
Yeah, well, actually that trip, again, was not a festival, but it was a tap takeover for a new bar opening that the Russian brewers opened a bar. And they're called Zegavor Brewery, by the way, and I think they're on their way. But they opened a bar in Berlin and invited us and a bunch of their other NYC friends over to send beer and then come for their grand opening. And it was Berlin Beer Week. And then it turns out the Shelton brothers were over there as well for their annual trip. And they always go down to Bavaria. They go everywhere, but they go to Bavaria, and they go to this festival called Annafest, which is ridiculous. It's like it's on a mountainside, and it's all the local breweries down there, and they all have their old kellers, which is a cellar, which are these giant tunnels dug into the mountainside. They're hundreds of years old, and that's where they would lager their beer. And so on this weekend when they have the fest, all the breweries are there, and they open up their kellers, and they're serving steins of beer out of their kellers, and everyone's
just walk around and go to
actually
the different kellers.
Yeah.
Wow. And some you know, first observations from your trip to that part of Germany, Kat?
Like Disneyland.
Yes. We actually stayed in a bunch of castles. It's very weird. It's just castles everywhere. But it's so interesting because they have that purity law, right? And we're seeing this crazy influx of new beer and what we're calling a craft beer movement. But to them, they've been making craft beer for way longer than we have. They just do it better, according to them. They're very confident in this. But they, you know, if you're not familiar with the purity law, you can only use four ingredients, which is water, yeast, hops, and grain. Originally three because
15,
they didn't
15.
Right, and they didn't know
they didn't know about yeast.
They didn't know what was making it. It was like the
Louis Pasteur.
Yeah, it was like the first almost food
Wait,
safety law.
So let's
law.
Go back. If they didn't know about yeast before Louis Pasteur, and what did they have? An old spoon that was collecting yeast, and if they added that in, weren't they violating the rules?
They were just that was just part of the equipment.
Yeah. It was just, I mean, it's yeast floating around you all of the time. I guess the most bizarre thing that I saw there was just all of the open fermentation for all their lagered beers without any sort of like off flavors or infections or anything. They're all these just what we would picture being like a sort of cool ship situation. And it's all open fermentation for every single Helles, Pilsner, everything. All of their top fermented yeast is in these. And they swear by it. They've been doing it for generations. And it allows them to scoop all of the yeast off from the top, as well as any of those bitter tannins that they don't want in the beer. And then they just reuse the yeast. It's crazy. And we're all like, oh my God, don't breathe in this room. We're worried, don't touch anything. Like, and they don't, God, I didn't taste a single funky beer out there. Just the best lagered beer you've ever tasted in your entire life. I miss it, honestly. Can you tell? This is delicious too, whatever we're drinking.
IPA.
Was it KCPC?
Not Ryan High School.
777. Yeah. So, and your trip, Pete, so you were at Gonstaller, you're on the hills of Keller.
Yeah, we went down in
Keller Hills.
one of the Shelton Brothers breweries is this guy Gonstall. Gonstaller's the brewery. He's actually an Americanophile. He has a cool ship. He has an old tower brewing system, so it's gravity. But he's put some modern equipment in there as well. Excuse me. And on the top of the tower is a cool ship, and he uses it when he knocks out his wort, and he uses it like a hop back. So we actually did a Doppelbach. We called it a Hoppelbach because we put Citra and Mosaic hops in the cool ship and knocked out onto that. And yeah, he's in that tower. Actually, he's got like license plates from all 50 American states. He's got a hop tattoo on him. He likes hops. Germans, I think, make wonderful beer. I think they make beautiful, malty, amazing liquid. But I wish they just put, and I said it before, a little more hops in there. And he does. So he's been influenced by us, and it's still a Reinheitsgebot. But yeah, so we made a nice beer there, and it made it to the States like, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 months later.
And what about, so Morka, I've been so excited to see you and hear about this little trip.
Was this cool ship copper?
Yeah, of course.
So there's only 4 of them operating in Germany, and they're massive, right? They're like the biggest like things you've ever seen, and they use them for cooling, and they're slightly like slanted, so they create, they use it for a whirlpool, they use it for a hot back, and
it's a settling tank.
Yeah, and it's they're beautiful. They're like the most beautiful things you've ever seen, just old copper.
They'll chill it down to 70°C and then they'll take it over a heat exchanger.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, for these things, they've been around for so long. They're very, very beautiful. Cool. Yeah. One of my favorites that we saw was, which is probably everybody's favorite from the trip that they've seen, was Sister Doris, who is a nun. People know her because I guess Vice did a thing on her. But she's in Malersdorf, and she's the only brewing nun in the world. And she just turned 70, she's turning 70, which is crazy. And she doesn't have anybody to like take over for her. She literally brews on this 60 hectoliter system, which is about 50 barrels here, all by herself. And it's crazy. She's just like, she does it and she goes up so many stairs because they're so like, ecologically friendly out there. They don't want to use elevators or anything. So there's like, oh my God, I swear I went up 1,000 stairs
electricity every single place. At a premium over there. And it's the carbon footprint.
Yeah. It really, almost every brewery I went to had had an alternate energy source. So whether it was a wood chipper or solar power or wind energy, they were very proud of the fact that what they had was operated by energy.
Russian. You know, interesting, that they created. The first ever time any archaeologist or a historian, I guess, found any mention of hops was a German nun in the year, I think, 900.
Okay. She said that they, actually, when we went to any of these abbeys, whether it was nuns or what's the male equivalent? I get monks. They're having a lot of trouble finding new ones. So she told us every year, like 50 nuns die, whereas every 5 years they get a new one. And so they're like having a really hard time recruiting in these abbeys. So I think a lot of people think in the abbeys you have to be a nun or, a patre or one of the people that are part of the church. It's just it wouldn't ever be possible anymore. So the people in a lot of the abbeys I saw, they were not ordained or anything. So they just only her. But the rest of them were like they work there, but they, they don't have just all like religious people. I wish.
Same thing in Belgium. Yeah. I don't know if there's any actual monks. I think West Vleteren might have one, but
yeah.
Or Chimay, but I think everyone else is lay.
I know. Chimay is what tricks us into it is because of all their labeling.
There's not monks brewing.
No. There are monks brewing.
And hey, you're getting everybody involved. So who's your buddy?
This is Alex from Zegavor out of
this
Moscow.
This guy just walked in.
Hello, guys.
How are you, man?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
So you're the Russian brewer.
Yes.
You're all over. You're yes. Other half. This guy's all over Tom New Brad. York City. I keep hearing about you. Everyone says the Russian brewer's in town.
Sorry, I didn't get it.
Oh, Pete will translate.
Okay.
He's just saying that you're popular.
No. Not yet anymore.
Yeah. Actually, you travel a lot.
Yeah. It just happened because I love beers. You know?
You guys have prolific brewers.
Yes. Yes.
Well, great.
And hey, they make great beer, too.
Trying to be.
Quickly, what's the name of your brewery?
It's Zagor, means in English, conspiracy.
Great, man. Listen, we're going to take a short break because we've been on for a while. We'll be back in a minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Okay, thanks.
Here on Beer Sessions Radio, we care about what you're drinking, and we want to help you out in the kitchen too. For real. There's one smart kitchen appliance that makes cooking simple, the Joule Sous Vide. Joule uses precise temperature control to take the guesswork out of cooking. So steak, chicken, seafood, pork, roast, eggs, veggies, all come out exactly the way you like them. Joule comes with hundreds of step-by-step recipes and guides for endless inspiration. Bring out your inner chef without any effort. Joule, perfect food every time. To get yours, visit chefsteps.com/joule and use our code HRN to get $15 off for a limited time. That's chefsteps.com/joule, code HRN. That you can never just live. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guys, our annual gala is coming up in December. Just check it out, heritageradionetwork.org, and support the network because we have some great shows, farm shows, cheese shows, chef shows, and, of course, Beer Sessions Radio. All right, it's a special show today. Katerina Martinez from Lineup Brewery just came back from her Pink Boots Society trip to Franconia, Germany. How are you, Katerina?
Lovely. How are you, Jimmy?
Great. And we got our new buddy from the Russian brewer who's in town.
Hello, everybody.
Tell us your name again, the name
Alex,
of the brewery.
And Alexander from Zagor Brewery in Moscow.
In Moscow. And, of course,
Pete Lenja from KCBC.
Yeah, so we were talking about a lot of things. Traveling around Europe, but also all the different brewers that are coming to New York City now. But keep going. Talk about Franconia, Kat, because I know you were inspired. You posted some really cool stuff.
I mean, we went, honestly, by the sixth day, I was very tired. We went to a lot of different places, learned a lot just about German techniques that, like, we knew about, but, like, we don't really do a lot of here. So, I mean, their systems are different. You know, everything's measured in metric system different than what we do. But at the end of the day, it's very similar. But I would say that just a lot more lagered beers, and they do it so well. The history of the lagering is probably the most interesting to me. We saw a lot of old school ice machines because, you know, it was illegal for them to even brew beer in the summer for a long time because, they didn't have any temperature control. And like the cave Pete was talking about, we saw some of those. Actually, in the oldest abbey we went to is from 1050, which is crazy. They had one of those caves, and it cools it down to, even still without artificial, it still cools it down to around 8 degrees Celsius. So, which is like so cold, you know, and it allowed them to make a lot of really just delicious lagered beers. The hop side of it is, I like that they don't use as many hops as we do. Pete was just saying how he wishes they did. But that's the only way that they can really experiment in this like new craft beer scene. So you're starting to see a lot more IPAs and people trying to do new things out there. So I think a lot of people think that's a big misconception. They think that German people don't make IPAs or don't do that, but that's, they're allowed to do that. That's actually the main way they're allowed to experiment. So,
and then so Pete, tell us how you met our Russian brewer friend
In jail.
And Kat, why don't you pop one of your German beers
first? Well, this is a weird beer, but you could go tell him how you met in jail.
I was actually brewing at Finn back at the time, and he came by for a collab
in New York.
I think he was here for other half and Finn back collab. How'd you meet? What, social media, interwebs?
No, I met Sam from Other Half.
Festival?
Somewhere, a festival in Europe. And then I told him I'd come in like next couple months, and he said, okay, let's do something. And then through the
showed up.
Other Half met Finback, and stuff like this. And then we met Pete, and he told us, I'm planning to open brewery somewhere soon. Come back and do something with us. So, you know, it's like beer world is small, and like it's like a lot of friendship making easy because people feeling...
Because it's beer.
Yeah, because it's beer. People just love it and love share knowledge, love share everything.
What about the scene in Germany? So did you open up a tap room in...
Yeah, we have a tap room in Berlin. Our partnership tap room with local friend of us partner. You know, it's kind of weird. It's still like a lot of old school beer and old school stuff happening in Germany. People love the Pilsners, people love the traditional stuff, and it's very cheap and good quality. And it's really tough market for craft beer actually now. I think one day it might change, but now it's pretty tough market. Because people love their local beers.
Yeah, very supportive of their local.
And they love traditional beers.
I think they have, that's actually probably their biggest problem if they're trying to introduce new things. Any IPA, you know, they use a lot more hops, is like €5 on the menu, whereas like a half liter of a Helles is, you know, €2. And you're and everybody's so traditional, they're like, no, I'm going to stick with this Helles. And it's, the best Helles you've ever had. And it's local. And so they are having a lot of trouble changing with the times. I'm sure that's crazy. So
what is it about the German traditions, you know? They're making great lagers. You guys as brewers, you know, what are they doing that we don't do here? Or can we also make great lagers like that?
We can. I think the main thing that they're doing that we're not doing mostly, but some brewers are, is decoction, which is a technique whereby it's historical, and it was originally basically finishing what the maltster could not do at the time in the brew house. So it's a way of kind of stepping up through temperature ranges of the mash. They had under-modified malt, so they had to do these step mashes where they'd take a portion out and they would basically boil it. They'd put it in the kettle. Like at Gonstaller, he has a kettle with a rotating chain in the bottom, so it keeps the malt from scorching on the kettle bottom, which was direct-fired. And then they move that back into the mash to raise the whole mash to another temperature step. And they do that up to 3 times, maybe even more, I don't know. And it would finish what the maltster wasn't able to do back in the time with the technology and the quality of the malt, the barley.
And that's called decoction.
Decoction. And it gives you, it's debated, but it gives you a unique kind of malt character that some people think is not necessary with today's malts and the variety of malts we have. But I think a lot of German brewers are still doing that.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of things. They're like very careful about their fan, their free amino nitrogen content. They do a lot of settling with their lagers, like even before transferring it into the fermenter. They'll do a little settling tank and try to just get just the wort. And like Kat was saying, with their open fermentation, they'll take off what's called the brown hef, which is the yeast that has a lot of these harsh tannins in it, and they'll remove that. They're always trying to like clean and clean and clean and make very clean and pure wort, and then they're fermenting it cold with their lager strains and actually properly doing a lager where they keep it cold for an extended period of time to where it's at its optimum like flavor and conditioning, and then they'll put it out. We have a lot of stress as a small brewer in the U.S. to get beer out. We make lagers, we make lots of lagers, and we do 5 weeks, which is a long lagering period for a lot of brewers. And that ties up our tanks. We could put two and a half, maybe three ales out in that time that we're sitting with one lager in the tank. And lagers don't sell, even though they take more time to produce and actually cost you more opportunity cost to make that beer. They sell for a lot less than an IPA.
Yeah.
So that's why you see most craft brewers putting out ales, because they can turn them around a lot faster, and they can sell them for more than a lager.
And so if you get, we were talking before about the Kvek yeast from Norway. So if you start using Kvek yeast, you're going to be
you could double your production. Faster. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say that's like the difference for sure. Well, there's two things. Like you said, the time that they take to lager. Oh, no. First, we'll start with decoction. Everybody does a double decoction, which is just not common here that I know of anyway. And it's probably, it's funny because it is arguable that it's maybe not even worth it, but they're just not even going to change their process. Like, they've been doing it for so long that they don't even care. And there's, I mean, there's a little bit of magic behind it and the flavors that they're getting, so I wouldn't change it either. And then the other side of it is, yeah, I mean, they're lagering for 8 weeks. That's it. Like, that was what they told me. Maybe at the very least six, but, like, almost every single one of them is, you know, lagering for a really long time. And that's, for us in America, we're just really trying, especially in New York City, really trying to crank beer out, right? Everything's very fast-paced here. So that was, I think, that was probably the most refreshing part of being out there is the slowdown of the time that it took, the time, the quality, the care that they put into it.
I have two anecdotes about German beer. A couple of years ago, because, you know, like the stand, I know Germans are diehard lovers of their beers, and some of the standard international brands like a Beck's, a German television station, did a taste test where they took the Beck's that was made in Germany and the Beck's that was made in America.
Totally different.
To see if the Germans could actually taste it. And I thought that was hilarious because I don't know if anybody could. Do you think they could?
Absolutely. I actually brought Beck's. I did the same thing myself. I brought a bunch of beer back, as Kat did. And I purposely brought some Beck's back and went and bought some at the store here and did a side-by-side. They're completely different. And I don't know if that's a matter of our distribution and the freshness of the beer or where it was produced or if it's been pasteurized or what. I think they're probably both pasteurized, but I don't know what it was, but they're very different. And when Kat cracked this beer and poured me some, that is a classic with a twist, because yeah. She'll tell you in a minute. But German lager aroma, and for me, it's a slight but very enjoyable sulfur content that's in there that I love.
Yeah.
And when you drink Beck's in Germany, it's there. When you drink Beck's here, it's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what beer did you pour?
The classic lager with a twist. I brought a very weird beer. This is from a little tiny town called Nittenau. And so this is Brauhaus Nittenauer, and they...
Nittenau Brau?
It rhymes. This is... I had a really weird experience here because when we got there, their owner was like, hey, we have an American brewer. This is our American brewer. And so, of course, I went up to him and was like, hey, where are you from? He's like, I'm from Colorado. And I was like, what? I was like, I'm from Colorado originally. Where? Where'd you go to high school? And he... Turns out we went to high school together. This brewer in this little tiny town in Germany. I don't even know how it happened. Anyway, we were just, our minds were blown that we knew each other and like everything came storming back. And he gave me this beer. This beer is called Turn, the special beer. And this beer has hemp in it, which is very weird for them because
not Reinheitsgebot.
It's not Reinheitsgebot. So we were like, how knit Reinheitsgebot. We asked, how could you do that? It turns out you can actually file with the government for an exception, and that's what they did with this beer. So
does it say beer on the label?
It says the special beer. Yes. Special so beer. They also, this beer though, for the most part, completely goes either to Italy or Asian markets. So this isn't really sold in Germany itself, but you can definitely taste the dankness of that hemp. The label, when you're there, it says it has like small amounts of THC in it. I was a little surprised that I got that back into America. I don't really know.
Are we going to get arrested?
I was like, maybe I don't think they saw the label, but New York isn't quite there yet with that, but I thought it would be interesting to bring because, THC infused beers and hemp infused beers are just like starting to be a really big thing. I think we're going to see a lot of them in the next coming years.
It's so. Definitely coming, and it's mm-hmm. and it's not about the THC necessarily. It's about right. the terpenes.
Right, right.
They and as
what's terpenes?
That's the hop oil that gives you the aroma. Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of, but. As most of you probably know out there in the world, hops and hemp are the two closest cousins, and they share a lot of characteristics, including the oil content, and that's why a lot of people are going, oh, that IPA is dank, because it smells like pot, and it smells like pot because they're cousins and they have similar chemicals in them, compounds, and one of which is the terpenes, and there's been a huge push on research in that. I was at a Master Brewers Association meeting in San Diego recently, and Hopsteiner did a talk on hemp terpenes. Everyone's looking into this, and as it becomes legal in more and more states, and it's already been happening in the states where it is legal, it's going into beer, and that's definitely coming in the future.
Man, our friend from Russia, tell us your name again and the name of your brewery.
Alex from Zagovar.
Alex.
One more time.
Alex.
One more time. Just kidding.
Okay.
Keep going, Pete. That's good. So, you know, you got a spot in Berlin now. Tell us what your take on beer in Germany. You know, do they appreciate what you're doing? You know, any certain small breweries that you really like in Germany?
Oh, Germans are interesting people. So, we mostly brew like IPAs, sour ales, and imperial stouts, and that stuff we send from Russia to German bar too. So, and people like a lot of sour stuff with fruits and stuff like this, because they got this Berliner Weiss with fruit syrup, fruit added from very ancient times. So that's very close to their culture. But for IPAs, a kind of tricky thing for them. We got even KCBC beer in our bars and Finbeck and some others. People like it, but still kind of not afraid. But
not so sure.
Yeah, they're not falling in love like here.
You think it takes people a while to get accustomed to hops?
That was our hope when we opened bar like 2 years ago almost now, but it's still not coming.
Now you're selling all lagers?
Yeah, they're still like we have a couple of lagers on tap and they're still very popular. So.
So do you sell beers that you make in Russia and other beers?
Yeah, of course. Some local trying to bring some other Russian breweries to promote them in Europe and stuff like this. So yeah. But we are really like surprised because the Mikkeller bar is opened in Berlin, BrewDog bar opened in Berlin, and there are like around 10 more craft beer bars, and they're pretty crowded all the time. But still it's not like a blast like here or even in Russia. It's in Moscow, over 50 craft beer bars now, so, and people wow. like it, and they're always full.
Yeah.
But in Germany is still sleeping. I don't know why.
They're traditional.
It's beer country.
But they drink a lot of beer.
Yeah, from my expectation, they should, like, it's the first country in the world to be in the beer stand. But
okay, let's taste another beer that you brought from Germany.
This is it.
I don't think
that's all you brought.
I don't. Yeah, oh, just one. Yeah, so yeah. I guess they are sleeping.
Oh, the pink boots drank all of my other beer.
I have a stout.
Let's do KCBC.
I was going to agree with him.
We'll talk German, but we're going to drink KCBC. Okay.
You know what they told me as far as IPAs go? I thought this was an interesting anecdote. Women love IPAs in Germany. That's their main audience. So it's because the beer is, or the way they think it is because a beer is served in a smaller, like wine glass, sort of glass. And so the women like that better than drinking the liters. So their primary market for IPAs is women, which is so opposite from, or what you would think was opposite, which is obviously not
easier
on
your digestion.
Yeah. But the way that we think is that women don't like IPAs. Obviously, women love IPAs, but the way that we present it and market it is that IPAs are like super dank for dudes, you know. But out there, it's like very much embraced that women like IPAs. So it's pretty interesting.
I like drinking my IPAs out of like a little goblet myself. So.
Yeah,
I agree. I can't drink liters of IPA.
Yeah. 12 ounces is probably good.
I can, but things will get weird.
But that is a different culture. Drinking your liter or half liter of beer and just drinking it down. I mean, that's a different way of drinking. You know, I think I'm used. I always started drinking strong beers. Talking about German beers, I would drink like a Doppelbock or Aventinus or like a strong Belgian Trappist. I never started drinking beer just to have like beer.
Well, they serve it as water. Just comes cheaper than water. Like,
I didn't drink much
water when I was there. I
don't know if I probably spent a few days where I had no water.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, but there's water in the beer. You're fine. And the beer's €2 and the water's €5. Something. And you're like, yeah, it's crazy. And you're like, you try and ask for tap water and they bring you out like a bottle of sparkling. You're like, that's not what I wanted. But I mean, beer is, but that's the thing is, it's not like used as a binge drinking situation. And the legal age is 16. So I'm sitting in bars with 16-year-olds who are just drinking beer like regular, whereas like in America we'd probably be like, you know, binge drinking it or whatever. They're drinking it like it's a beverage, it's part of your food, you know, like it's what you eat with your meals or drink with your meals. So just totally different perspective, honestly.
What's the drinking like in Russia, I wonder?
Drinking what?
Do they drink heavily in Russia?
Heavily, always.
Beer
too.
Yeah.
No, I mean
I can
attest
to that. I've been out with these guys a few times.
No, still, I've seen many times in our bar. We have a bar in Moscow, like people drinking one imperial stout after another, and like
Jesus.
3-4 times, and then walk into another bar.
Talk about drinking. Walk. So you guys are here. You're going to go to the New York City Brewers Guild.
No, I was gathering. Just came back.
Oh, you were there already.
Stole him.
At Braven Brewery. So, Pete, what's the stout, the KCBC stout?
This is a Russian session stout. this is an oyster stout we did.
Session stout.
with Randolph beer. We put, 60 pounds of oyster shells in the kettle. It's 4.2%. It's got Maris Otter chocolate, brown malt, black malt, flaked oats. Yeah, it's delicious.
Very good.
Thanks for giving us the recipe, man. Mm-hmm. I like the chocolate Anytime. Malt in there.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that. Well, we're off to a great start. We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, Katarina from Lineup Brewing and Pete from KCBC here. We're talking about travels in Europe, German beers, and we got Alex from which brewery in Moscow?
Zagovor.
He walked in too, so it's a New York City Brewers Guild night. So Katarina, highlights of your trip to Franconia. You said there are some cool ships, there's decoction. What did you take away? What's a beer that you're going to make that was inspired by your trip?
So I already make a pretty famous German Pilsner called Bier Janssen that...
I didn't think you could say that name on
there. I can. I was waiting for somebody to come and like knock me out from behind when I said it. So I'm remaking that beer. And I mentioned this before. It's going to be called Pils, Pils, Pils. So the main takeaway was what hop additions I'm going to add... I don't even want to tell everybody. I know, now I'm going to. It'll be a mix of different things, but we went through the Hallertau region. We went, you know, through Spalt, all of these places that grow hops, right? Like hops are their life, and the whole community orbits around the hops and then the beer that's made by them. So I asked every single brewery what was in their Pilsner, what was in their German Pilsner, and I would tell you, like, almost every single place I went, it was Pertle.
Okay.
Almost every single time. And then Tettnang, like a little bit, but like mostly
no
Pertle.
No Hallertau?
No, and that's what I use. So I was like very interested that was like what they, you know, what they use. So I think I will change the recipe a little bit to just experiment with that.
What's the Pertle hop?
I mean, it's just another, it's a noble hop. It's just, it's mild as well. It's probably like, what's the alpha acid? Probably like around 8%. Nothing super 7% lighter.
Pretty high for German hops.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I mean, it's, it's nice. It's floral, but they're also like light, and that's what I love about them. But I don't know. I liked how Beer Yonce came out. It was a great beer, but I definitely want to, now that I've been there, I want to play with some other
Noble Hops. You got some new secrets. Yeah. And Alex, so you come to New York, you're making collaborations. Where have you been making collaborations on this recent trip?
This trip?
Yeah.
Just yesterday we made another collaboration with Azahav, triple IPA. And today we made a collaboration with Finbeck. It will be some milkshake with watermelon, stuff like this.
What?
How do you approach your collaborations? Because you're traveling a lot. You guys already have the recipes worked out by email.
Yeah. We talk, sometimes phone calls, mostly mails, discuss some details, some ideas, some designs. So, yeah.
And what about for you, Pete? I mean, you're traveling a lot. Is that how it works? You just do emails? You plan it out in advance, have the ingredients lined up?
Yeah, it's mostly email. If it's someone that's local and I know them real well, like today, text. We do an interborough collab. I've texted Jesse back and forth. And we're like, this. And today it was Trevor at GBA, and it's a few Green texts point. And we're done.
So what did you make with Trevor?
We're going to make... We've made a beer before, an IPA, but we're making another one, which will be our first Quebec strain IPA. And it's simple pills and... I think Thomas Fawcett Pearl, 50-50 wheat and flaked wheat for some haze and protein. And then we're going to do some special hopping technique that he's developed.
So the Quebec, that's a Norwegian yeast that people are talking about.
Yeah, super yeast.
And you're saying he did a real fast turnaround on that.
He's been using it with great success. And he said he put one IPA out in 7 days, which is crazy.
Wow. Yeah. What each one of you brewers, tell me something that you've learned recently in one of your trips or collaborations. It could be about the culture of the place or in particular like a secret like this Quebec yeast, the fast yeast. Okay, Pete.
One of the brewers in Scandinavia was telling me about, I don't want to give away their secrets. I'll just say without permission, so he has a malt that you wouldn't expect, but he's discovered that it's just an under-modified malt and has a lot of protein and gives you a good haze. I would share it, but I would need his permission first. He might have just given that to me.
So it's not oats.
It's not oats. I'm so over oats, by the way.
What about you, Alex?
Oh, I learned a lot because, I made collaboration in States and I made collaboration in Russia and in Europe too. So every region got its own approach to brewing. How people brew, how people ferment, how people harvest yeast, how people dry hop. Like in Europe is a lot of influence of German culture. How they brew, what type of brew houses they have. Oh, yeah. In Russia we have also a big influence of European culture, and in States people tend to go so fast, like IPA within 2 weeks or something like this. In Europe, people tend to wait like 4 weeks before they make an IPA or something. So it's really interesting. Every brewery got its own approach in something, and you can learn something from them. And I'll share your knowledge, how you do. Maybe they will like it. So it's always interesting. Collaboration is always like about sharing knowledge between each other. It's interesting.
Always an exchange. It's like, oh, this is what we do. Oh, this is what we do.
Yeah.
This is why we do it. This is our beer, taste this. And this is ours, taste this. It's always an exchange. It's great.
And Katarina, it's something else you got from your trip besides a new Noble Hop?
A lot of about yeast health, honestly. I think they take just really interesting approaches to yeast harvesting, yeast washing, and then we went to the Harvard of
Weinstephan?
Yes, the Harvard of beer schools out there is called Weinstephan.
Oldest brewery.
Yeah, Weinstephan, and it they also, on top of it being a school, and they train these master programs for master brewers. They also are a business, and so every brewery sends samples to them and tries to get like accredited by them. But was very apparent that every brewery really cares about what is in their beer, so, and what, how clean their yeast is, all these things. It's basically a lab for people who don't have labs within their breweries. So we don't do a ton of that. I know Pete just got a really cool lab, but like that's not something we, a lot of the brewers out here have. So just Pete, the yeast health is very interesting. You have a lab at KCBC?
Oh yeah. We've got a UV spec. We've got a PCR machine.
So, and what are you looking for? You're looking for analyzing yeast while you're brewing?
I like to fingerprint our beers. I send samples of our beers off for water chemistry profiling. I like to, when we find something that's really working, I want to know why. And so we can reproduce it. And beer, as the Germans would tell you, is mostly water. And the water chemistry is really going to have a huge impact on your beer. That's how most beer styles developed, around the water, the local water. And that's something that I'm really into, is water chemistry. And there's been a lot of research done lately. Like, we all put water profiles together, and then we do chemistry for our beers, and sulfate, calcium chloride ratio, and this and that. But I've been listening to some research lately that like Ballast Point's been doing and others on the contribution of salts from your malt, which is huge. It's mind-blowing. Like, we're working with, this is our water, what's in it, this is what we're putting in it, and then you add your malt and it changes everything.
Yeah.
And it depends on where your maltster is located and their water. And so people don't, unless you're brewing with the same malt, and then that's now a constant, you've got a variable in your water profile that you don't know what it is.
That's pretty deep.
So that's why I'm kind of profiling our beers. Wow. I want to figure out what's going on, what these malts are contributing.
So to flip that, working. Let's just say you guys made, let's say I made a beer. I wanted to have like 10 brewers make a beer with just New York City water without any other, you know, mineral additions or anything. Is that something that anyone's done? Is that interesting?
Yeah. Probably be a lager. we have there's not a lot going on in our water, and like it's pretty soft. There's not a lot of magnesium or calcium or any hardness to it, and that's why we had 100 plus breweries here pre-prohibition making lager beer.
Yeah,
like Pilsner is developed in Pilsen in the Czech Republic, and it was a difficult place to brew beer because their water was so soft, until they had this German Braumeister, Josef Grolsch, who studied malting in England and developed this new technique they did, and he learned it, technique for doing making a really pale malt, Pilsner malt. And then he took that and he paired it with their very soft water and made the Pilsner beer, and used their local hops, Zatz, as we call Saaz, developed Pilsner, or Kel. And it took over the world. He also used a yeast, a pure culture of yeast from Carlsberg Brewery, which is the first brewery to ever do a pure culture of yeast, and it was a lager yeast. And so he had a clean, pale, clear beer that was actually something very new at the time.
Not smoky.
Yeah.
Soft water and clean.
It was an indirect kiln, so it didn't have a smoke character to it, and it had a pure culture of yeast, so it didn't have a funk to it.
Okay, and so in your travels, you've had experience. Okay, last question for everyone. Okay, so tell me of a collaboration experience in a different country or a different city where either the water or the circumstances have been challenging, and you may have learned from it or you may regret it. I don't know. I mean, is it ever that crazy, or is everyone operating like in the modern system now where they're able to modify their water, you know, get the ingredients they need?
Everyone that we've brewed with has figured it out. We're a little bit selective, like with who we decide to collaborate with. We're just not going to like, we want to know who they are, know that the beer is good, of course. And then we'll make a beer with them, and they've figured it out. There's lots of good brewers out there. So I haven't had a challenge anywhere, I'd say. I mean, they all know what they're doing, and we're just bringing in a little bit of what we do and putting it together.
What about you, for you, Alex?
With collaboration, I agree with Pete. I never face any issues like you're more experienced and people less experienced in this place. Everybody pretty well professional in their area. What I'm always missing is just to try the beer we made. Because sometimes sometimes you make in beer other part of the world and then next time you come and it's already gone or something. That's what I'm missing, because when you're making beer, then it's important to try it and to see what's your ideas, how they convert it into beer, what is the result action. Because collaboration is really good space for experimenting for both breweries, because it's one-time brew and you can put some experiments in it and then you'll see
Yeah, and if it doesn't turn out, you're just blaming on the collaborator.
It's the brewers.
No, the Zegavorg guy.
No, Pete, you're supposed to say blame it on the local water.
Yeah.
It's local water.
They don't know
what
that's
what I meant.
Water. And then, we're going to have to wrap up in a minute. That's why. So.
Yeah. I mean, especially as I go into building out my own brewery, seeing the German ones, I would say the hardest part, they're not trying to change anything about their breweries, and they're all so antiquated. Like, everything is so old, and it's so inefficient. All the stairs and the time it takes, and just old, right? And
but then they don't need a gym membership,
right? Oh, they do not. They definitely do not. They build those German people very well, and so it's interesting to see how we've perfected it in America for me. So layouts of things, obviously I'm not going to put in a bunch of stairs, but that was the biggest struggle, honestly, when we were brewing with people was. I mean, you're going up and down thousands of stairs. It's crazy at a time, especially for an old lady like Sister Doris. I'm like, geez, don't do this. I mean,
you're looking at me. I'm not an old lady.
It looks like a drawing of some ancient, Sumerian brewery, right? Where they're walking up steps with sacks of grain.
Oh, and they don't complain about it. They're all about it. But
I'm going to put steps in my next brewery.
No, we probably need to. But no, that was definitely the part that I didn't expect was how old and kind of scary some of these buildings are, but they're not trying to change it or anything. So I'm happy that we have.
Well, it's so great having you on it. And sorry we have to cut it off. And one person with something they got to say before I sign off. Pete has one.
What? No, no.
No, okay. Alex.
I'm thinking Alex.
What should I say? What should I say?
I don't know.
What do you want to say, Alex?
No, I want to say people don't be afraid of beer from any countries.
Yes, that's good. Yes.
Beers are great everywhere, so more travel, more beers.
See, more travel.
That
travel.
Was your question. I knew you had something to say, Alex. I love this guy. Pete, this is awesome. Katarina, thank you so much. And Pete from KCBC and Alex from, what's the name of the brewery?
Zagovar.
Zagovar. You guys made my day. This is a lot of fun. We get Thanksgiving next week. And I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Justin Kennedy, producer. Dylan Hoyer, our intern. Matt Patterson, engineer. Thanks for joining us on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.